come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gilzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Boquist. Burley. Excused for business of the House. Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Karen Minnis.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be presented by Pastor Dale Harris of Hillsboro. He is a guest of Representative David Edwards.
Let us be in the attitude of prayer. Holy One, we stop to acknowledge your presence here among us. In these moments of silence and reflection, we acknowledge with deep gratitude the heritage of democracy that is ours in this state and this nation. For those of vision and commitment over the years who have worked and sacrificed for representative government in Oregon, we are grateful. To those who have risen above the narrowness of special interest and selfish privilege and fought for the common good, we are greatly indebted. For those who have stood against the crowd and marched to a different drummer for justice and human dignity, we thank you. May all who have been elected to this body be reminded once again of the sacred trust given to them by their fellow citizens. May each member of this House have the courage to work for the betterment of all who call this beautiful state home. May they be especially sensitive to the needs of children, the sick, the elderly, and those who find it difficult to find employment and housing. May these public servants be granted the courage to support causes they know are right, even at the cost of personal power and position. May they also be given the discernment to know when compromise is necessary to achieve a larger goal. May they truly be devoted to the improvement of this state and its people. May we never take the gift of democracy for granted and always endeavor to protect the freedom with responsibility that it promises. Keep us mindful, God of all peoples, that as a wise man once said, it is the goodness of humans that makes democracy possible, and it is the evil of humans that makes democracy necessary. Amen.
Courtesies. Representative Minnis. No, Representative Dallum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. A week ago Sunday, I had the privilege of traveling from the Dalles to John Day. And if you make that trip, you will see wind towers blossoming like mushrooms or daffodils in the spring. I have two people here today that are very responsible for that, and I'd like Jeremy Norton and Paul Wooden to step to the bar. There's been a lot of talk this session on how we can change our reliance on dwindling fossil fuels. We have here two of the folks that are trying to make that happen. Jeremy Norton is a training manager for PPM Energy, which is the second largest provider of wind power in the nation. It's headquartered here in Oregon. Paul Wooden is the executive director of Community Renewable Energy Association. The two men with their partners from Columbia Gorge Community College are fueling the growth of more than 20 major wind farms that are either operating, under construction, or permitting in our state. In fact, Paul predicts that within 5 to 10 years, the number of large commercial wind projects in Oregon and Washington will rival all the wind projects in California. They're here today because they need our help to ensure that the community colleges get the investment it needs to expand sufficiently to meet the demand for skilled technicians for this brand new burgeoning industry. Columbia Gorge Community College has created a renewable energy technology program to maintain wind farms, microhydro, biomass, geothermal, and other renewable energy projects. This is the first training program west of the Mississippi. The program trains students for a broad spectrum of positions requiring skill in electrical, electronic, and electromag mechanics. Graduating the program will prepare these students to maintain the multi-million dollar wind farms. With your help, they'll be able to double or triple the number of students trained each year. We can train these Oregon-grown products here at Columbia Gorge, or we can import them from east of the Mississippi River. Please join me in welcoming to our chamber today these pioneers in sustainable alternative energy. The well-being of our state may depend on the success of their efforts. Thank you.
A number of us do have here today members of the small business community, and I'm going to read a general note here because so that we don't all have to individually introduce those from our districts. Governor Kulongoski has proclaimed Tuesday, April 24, 2007, as Small Business Day in Oregon. There are more than 330,000 small businesses in Oregon. 98% are small businesses. They play a major role in stimulating our state's economy. In the last 10 years, these businesses have provided two-thirds of the newly created jobs for Oregonians. Small business is the foundation of our economy and the engine of job growth. Today, there will be many small business owners and service providers at the Capitol. We welcome these owners to Salem, and we applaud their entrepreneurial spirit and their success. Representative Edwards, David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd invite you to thank and extend courtesies to my guest this morning, Pastor Dale Harris, retired from the United Methodist Church. He's one of my constituents and has served churches in the Willamette Valley in Central Oregon for over 40 years. This morning marked his inaugural invocation, and I want to thank you personally, Dale, for your good service.
Thank you, Pastor Harris. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to welcome several students here who are here today serving as honorary pages to the House. They all attend Holcomb Elementary and Middle School in Oregon City, and they're in the sixth grade. They're accompanied by their teacher, Lori Rolfe. With us today, Chad, and please stand when I mention your name, Chad Thompson, who enjoys soccer, baseball, and computer, and is interested in furthering his education and becoming a member of the law enforcement. Michaela Ruby, who likes art, PE, and music, wants to be a professional hairstylist. Raina Drake, who enjoys working in the student store, being a Head Start buddy, and pitching for her softball team. Janessa Hebert, who works to be, wants to be either a veterinarian or a firefighter. And Daniel Slack, who likes reading, writing, math, and social studies, wants to be either a lawyer or a soccer player. Quite a combo. Destiny Worthen, who is involved in the TAG program and intends to be either a veterinarian or an author. Thank you all very much for coming today. We also have up in the gallery visitors today, a group of students from Oregon City Christian Academy. Welcome to the house today, and we all hope that you enjoy your tour and visit. Thank you very much.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to add my welcome to Representative Edwards, to Reverend Harris. He is David Edwards' constituent, but he's a member of my church.
So. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand today to introduce two students who are with us today as honorary pages from Eugene. Marissa Armas and Rosemary Widener are both students at Kelly Middle School. Marissa Armas is involved in track and soccer, and her career goals are to be a herpetologist or psychologist. And Rosemary Widener, also from Kelly Middle School, is involved in soccer and yearbook, and her career goal is to attend college. Welcome to both of you. Welcome to the Capitol.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask my colleagues to welcome to the Capitol today a group of 38 students from the Class Academy in my district, and it's Senator Vakians who's sitting here to help welcome them as well. These are third and fifth graders. And the leader of the group is Amy Hintz, and I welcome you all to the Capitol and ask my colleagues to do the same.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to, the member of the House, extend courtesies to my intern, Michael Kempton, and she has been interning me since January. He always comes to my office on time. That shows who he is. And Michael is a senior at the Oregon State University, majoring in business administration. Michael is currently serving as a member of a student incidental fees committee at OSU. His parents are Chuck and Barbara Kempton. His father works for Keith Sporting Goods in Gresham, which is in my district, and his mother, part-time for the Condominium Association. Michael's goal is to get into city management and serve the people of Gresham. Not only in the city of Gresham, I'm hoping he served statewide, hopefully nationwide. And this is an extraordinary young man. I wish him well and great success in the future. I'm very fortunate having him as my intern. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bill 707, 160, 149, 161, 234, 302, 567, 592. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that he has signed Senate Bills 5526, 5523, 5514, 5510, and 5532.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Forgive me, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that Senate Bill 400 be taken from the table.
Representative Schaffler moves that SB 400 be taken from the table. The motion is not debatable. Those of the opinion that SB 4, call of the House. Representative Barnhart asked for a call of the House. He is joined in that by Representatives Rosenbaum, Representatives Cannon, Representative Shields, Representative Buckley, and Representative Kotek. Doorkeepers bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. And the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Flores Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gelzer Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Morgan Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Flores. Morgan. Excuse, not subject to the call. 2, Boquist, Burley. All members are present. Representative Barnhart, to what point? No. Those of opinion that Senate Bill 400 should be taken from the table will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger? Representative Berger votes no. Representative Flores votes no. Representative Scott votes no. The motion to take Senate Bill 400 from the floor, from the table, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 341, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on third reading and final consideration of Senate Bill 400. Representative Barker.
Mr. Speaker, I move Senate Bill 400 be referred to the Committee on Business and Labor.
Representative Barker moves that Senate Bill 400 be re-referred to the Committee on Business and Labor. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, there are some amendments that have been agreed upon, and we'd like to take it back, send it back to that committee where they can work those amendments into the bill and try to get it back to the floor.
Further discussion of the motion to re-refer? Seeing no one in the queue, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? Those opinion the bill should be re-referred to the Committee on Business and Labor will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? He votes aye. The motion to re-refer Senate Bill 400 to the Committee on Business and Labor, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Messages from the governor. Nope, we've had those. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3550 relating to sustainable communities.
Bill read first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2090 relating to information and documents filed with Secretary of State and declaring emergency. House Bill 2134 relating to interception of communications. House Bill 2201 relating to health appropriate amending prescribing effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 2264 relating to public contracted by education utilities and declaring emergency. House Bill 2651 relating to crime. House Bill 2654 relating to construction contractors. House Bill 2723 relating to post-transfer division of land. House Bill 2781 relating to construction liability insurance and declaring emergency. House Bill 2785 relating to hydroelectric projects. House Bill 2901 relating to public funds appropriate money. House Bill 2946 relating to health care delivery system pilot programs. House Bill 3119 related to county clerks. House Bill 3188 relating to State Department of Geology and Mineral Interests and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3328 relating to child abuse investigations and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3362 relating to workers' compensation coverage for home care workers. House Bill 3380 relating to commercial motor vehicles. House Bill 3406 relating to peace officers. House Bill 3442 relating to definition of police officer. House Bill 3466 relating to conservation districts. House Bill 3494 relating to the State Department of Agriculture. House Bill 3535 relating to State Financial Administration Department of State Police Appropriate Money declaring an emergency.
Bills read a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 3482 relating to Oregon Facilities Authority and declaring an emergency changes membership of Oregon Facilities Authority from 5 members to 7 members and declares that members serve at pleasure of State Treasurer.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3482A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? She votes no. House Bill 3482A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk, read the first bill.
House Bill 2472, relating to commuter rail.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2472A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like permission to use an audible and a visual aid.
Say, colleagues, I'd like to ask everyone to carry their conversations out into the lobby. And Representative Greenlick has asked unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there an objection?
And an audible aid, Mr. Speaker.
And a what?
And an audible aid.
And an audible aid. A visual aid and an audible aid. Is there an objection? Stand at ease. Colleagues, we were checking because a recording of a voice is not something that is allowed under an audible visual aid. That is not what Representative Greenlick has in mind. So I'll again ask, is unanimous consent? Is there an objection? Hearing none, Representative Greenlick, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please join with me, colleagues, in a little bit of dreaming. Let's start with a nightmare. 12 years from now, you're in Salem, and you have to catch a plane on Friday afternoon, and you know what the freeway's been like, what I-5 and 205 have been like. The traffic jams go now all the way from downtown Portland to Woodburn, and sometimes all the way to Salem. 205 is essentially bumper to bumper the whole way, and you're thinking about, you're in this horrible nightmare in your car, sweating, worrying about missing your airplane. Oops. Let's wake up. Let's have a good dream. In your good dream, you walk to downtown Salem upside down. Thank you. You walk to downtown Salem. You get on a train that looks like this. You ride that train to Beaverton, and in Beaverton you connect with TriMet, TriMet's Red Line, and you take the Red Line to the airport. 1 hour and 15 minutes from downtown Salem to the airport. Let's think about that pleasant dream. What we have on the floor today is House Bill 2472A, and that's a bill to begin a task force to look at the potential of expanding the Beaverton to Wilsonville train down to Salem. It's a most feasible option. We've had some preliminary conversations, and what this bill does is start the process along similar to the process that got us the Beaverton to Wilsonville train. If we look back at that train process, the train which will be starting for passenger service in October of 2008, it began in 1995 with a process very similar to what we're talking about here, with a group of people getting together to talk over the possibility of that train. In 1999, it prepared a capital and operating cost estimate. In 2001, they formally entered the Federal New Starts Project. In 2004, the final design was approved. In 2005, it got in the president's budget. In 2006, construction began. And 13 years after the process began, the train will begin operating. This bill does exactly the same thing. It starts that process. It creates a commission that includes the railroads, right-of-way that would be used, the mayors of Wilsonville, Tualatin, Beaverton, Woodburn, Donald, Kaiser, and Salem, the TriMet system that operates this commuter train right now, the Salem-Kaiser transit system, the ODOT, and a variety of other interested people. It simply begins a discussion about whether that dream as opposed to that nightmare can be a reality 13 years from now. The bill is a start on what might be a real dream for us. And I ask you all to support me in this beginning and support House Bill 2472A.
All done. Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, when the Beaverton to Wilsonville commuter rail line was just getting started, I was the mayor of Wilsonville. And the conversation started with myself and the mayor of Beaverton and Tualatin and Sherwood and Tigard standing outside the Greenwood Inn in Beaverton after a mayor's prayer breakfast. I hope I can say prayer breakfast on the House floor now. And we started talking about transportation issues, and we talked about the idea of, wouldn't it be terrific if there was a bullet train from Portland to Salem? And then we started talking about, well, why not a that went through, and of course I was advocating for it to go through Wilsonville, but that's not where the main line runs. But on some investigation, what we found out is that the old Oregon Electric line which at that time I was living on Boone's Ferry Road in Wilsonville, so it ran right behind my house. Runs from Beaverton and through Tigard and Tualatin and Wilsonville and across the Willamette River at Wilsonville and then heads south through St. Donald and Aurora and Kaiser and finally winds up here in Salem. And actually it goes even further south than that. The line was originally built in about 1900. And it did carry passengers through the Willamette Valley for a number of years. So we started the process, and we eventually got Washington County and TriMet, and then continued moving through. The one thing we knew about this project, because we were using existing line, because we were using existing right-of-way, and because we could partner with the private railroads, we knew that we could get this thing up and running for about 10% of the cost of light rail. And that included upgrading the tracks so that you can go in excess of 100 miles an hour and upgrading the and having buying the cars that would be what's called DMUs, which is a diesel unit that is self-contained. So it has the engine and the car body all in one. And that extra cars could be added as more traffic was needed. The Beaverton to Wilsonville line is expected to carry over 4,000 people a day by the year 2020. It very easily could carry people from Salem to Beaverton or Wilsonville or from Salem to Woodburn. And it gives another option. I have always been an advocate for a complete transportation system, not just a partial one. We do need to build more roads. We need to put resources into building more roads and improving some of our interchanges, especially our interchange at Woodburn right now needs to be made larger and allow more capacity. But we also need to be looking at our air travel and our rail travel and our other means of transportation. This is a viable alternative. I applaud the representative from Cedar Mills for bringing this bill forward. Had I been asked when the bill was dropped, I would have gladly signed on to it because I think that this is a real opportunity for us to start getting a little bit ahead in our transportation system. Now, some of you are thinking, you know what, rail, it's outmoded, it's outdated, and it's a waste of time and it's a waste of money because it's a fixed route. But that's part of the beauty of it is the fact that it is a fixed route and it's not trying to be combined with other modes of transportation. You're not putting buses on the same road that you're trying to pile more cars onto. It is a very efficient way to move, and I would encourage you to vote in favor of the bill, but I certainly understand if in your own thinking you don't see the value in it and you would just wish that it would go away. But the right-of-way is there. The rail is there. There is a precedent for a partnership, and I think this is something that can work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For the discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I voted against this in committee, and I'm going to stand before you today and argue against it as well. And my arguments are simple. If you're going to create a task force to see how this could work, you need to be objective about the task force. You just don't put people on the task force that are all for it. Now, in committee, we tried to put an amendment that would compare the projected costs and benefits of a commuter rail line from Wilsonville to Salem with the costs and benefits of road-based transit alternatives, including express bus service. Now, what this says, basically, the amendment would be, let's look at the alternatives to this. Maybe we can do it cheaper, and we were not allowed to put this amendment into the bill. Now, I think, for example, that in my part of the district, which is rural Marion County, One of the other problems that I have is that in the Tri-County area, it's an employee withholding tax. Now, if I'm in rural Marion County and it goes through Marion County, there's going to be a terrific cost to my district, and we're not going to make use of it. So there are two major reasons that I voted no. Now, I'd also like to add that down the pike here, there's been a bunch of bills come out of a couple committees that I voted no on, and so I am going to start what's known is going to be the turkey awards and the turkey rating system on bills. And it's going to be between one and three gobbles. Now, this one isn't a real major gobbler, but it's definitely a three-gobbler bill. So my problem with this is if you want a task force, then make a task force that's going to be objective to the costs and benefits, and we sure didn't get started in the right direction.
Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Some of you may not know that last session I spent the second half of the session living in Corvallis, and that's a ways away. But what I found out was from where I was living, it was about 10 minutes to the rail station in Albany, and they had free parking. And so I would drive there the 10 minutes, park in Albany, hop on the train, come to Salem, hop off the train, and as long as I brought my earplugs, I could watch the movie, listen to music, have the best cup of coffee. I still want to know what company they use. It's the best coffee I've ever had. And I'm Swedish, so I know coffee. Second piece I wanted to tell you about is in another life, before I came onto the floor as a legislator, and I was still a legislative assistant, and had a little more disposable income, I traveled to Europe about 3 to 4 times a year working on my book. And so most of it was in Sweden, but the rest of the part, at alternate years, I'd spend a month in France, and I took trains all over Europe. If I was living in a rural area, I did have a car at times, but train travel is really something we need to get on top of in this country, and I would think it fits right into Oregon's way of living. It would help with some of what Representative from Beaverton explained as the gridlock that we have to put up with in some areas in the mornings and in the evenings. And so I totally support this bill. I hope that we can widen our network of train travel and make things a little bit easier, and would recommend you go down to the representative from Corvallis' district on that train sometime and just check it out. It's a nice ride on a nice evening, and you can get back easily. Thanks very much. Support the bill.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, indeed.
He does.
Thank you, Representative from House District 33. Representative, I would wonder if you would clarify for us, please, the information presented on the fiscal analysis and the general fund designation for $67,497. And then the last statement on the bottom of page one, that if this task force creates a workload beyond the levels assumed by the Legislative Administration Committee budget or a level greater than the workload imposed by cumulative enactment of other bills, additional general fund resources may be required.
Yes, great. The fiscal, as I understand it, as I heard from the legislative administration, this fiscal is a fiscal for legislative administrative services. The task force will be managed by the legislative administrative services. My understanding is rather than going to Ways and Means when that's the case, the bill, if approved out of both houses, will go to the legislative administrative committee where they'll be looking at the money they've set aside for interim task forces, and the decision will then be made in that committee as to which task forces will be approved and not approved for support.
Follow-up or additional question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely.
The carrier yields.
Thank you. So then do I understand you to say that The Legislative Administration Committee will prioritize the numerous task forces that this legislative body is recommended be created. They all get in line, and they will be determined by priority assignment. Which task force, in fact, do go into play?
Well, many task forces, task forces, as we know, suggest that they be managed by one or the other of the departments, of the administrative departments, DHS or ODOT or something like that. Those bills need to go to Ways and Means for their decision. But of the bills that require, of the task forces that require legislative administrative support, they do go into a priority process, as you mentioned, and the decision is made by the Legislative Administrative Committee.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I at this point am really uncertain as to how I will vote, even though I think the motive of this bill and the concept is a good one. I just am concerned about creating all of these task forces that we are, in fact, if you're watching your committees, we're voting on them, we're sending them forward, and they all have good, great things for us to be focusing on. I'm just concerned that some of those resources, even above the $50,000 unwritten benchmark, that's something that should go to Ways and Means or to another committee that might be administering, is something that is just not being fully balanced in this process. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Yes, he does.
Yes, to the good representative from House District 33. In committee, we talked about the task force should compare commuter rail with other ways to reduce congestion on I-5. At that time, I gave the committee a courtesy yes. I'd want assurances that other options are going to be considered. Can you give me that assurance?
Thank you, good representative. We, in fact, had a conceptual amendment on the floor with that as a suggestion, I mean, in the committee with that as a suggestion. So I checked with the Washington County people who had gone through the process. You remember I mentioned a set of steps that they went through in Washington County, and what I found out was this analysis is in the second step. The first step, which is what this committee is tasked with, is to find out whether this is a generally desirable thing to work on and whether they ought to try and get the resources to move ahead. Step two is what's called a fatal flaw analysis, and that was done in the Beaverton process in 1997. And it asked these it was done by the cities, the counties, and Metro, and it asked these questions. Will there be sufficient ridership? Are there any serious engineering impediments? What legal obstacles exist? What are the railroad's attitudes about dual use of the line? That's the point where the question of is there an easier way to do it, a better way to do it, comes up. And this task force doesn't have essentially the resources or the folks to make that analysis, but it's absolutely a part of what goes forward, because if you can't prove that this is the most efficient way and the most effective way to do what you're trying to do, then it just doesn't get down the process.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close?
Yes, I would like to close, Madam Speaker. Thank you. Just a few brief comments. We talk about economic development in this chamber, and economic development is an important issue, and we talk about land use planning in an important way. What's happening in my district and in the representatives, the districts of the other representatives from Beaverton, is that the industrial complex that's developing in, say, the Wilsonville to Beaverton area, the so-called Silicon Forest, is pulling employees from a variety of places, but not very much from the south. One of the things that got the mayor of Kaiser very much interested in this was the notion that, Kaiser, in, to some extent, could become a Beaverton, could become a bedroom community for the industrial development that's going on in Wilsonville and in Tualatin and in similar places. In the same way, the mayor of Donald, a sleepy little town, if you've ever stopped to have breakfast or lunch at the Donald Cafe, you'll find this sort of sleepy little town with a strong history of being involved in railroading. They imagine the ability to become much closer to the metropolitan area and much more a part of the metropolitan area. This bill allows a variety of dreams, even more than those simply going from Salem to the Portland airport while you're reading a book, to the dreams and aspirations of the many communities along the way. I urge you all to allow this first step to move forward, to begin the discussion of whether this extension of the Beaverton to Wilsonville Railroad is a valuable extension. Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, colleagues.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill shall pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Oh, I get to vote right here?
Yeah, because you're the chair.
Oh, there we go. House Bill 2472A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2636, relating to government ethics.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill number 2636. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2636 is one of several bills we'll consider this session related to ethics. There are much more comprehensive ethical changes coming. This is really a very focused change that changes the, all it does is changes the name of the Oregon Government and Standards and Practices Commission, whatever that means, to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. That's what the name of the commission used to be. At some point in the past, it was changed. This really restores not only what was historically true, but makes it much more clear to the public what the commission is all about. A lot of us refer to the GSPC as the Ethics Commission anyway. This puts explicitly in the statute what many of us already implicitly do. It's a very simple bill, comes to you unanimously from your Election and Rules Committee, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hunt, do you wish to close? Those who are of the opinion that the bill shall pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin? Roblin votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2636, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2687, related to persons of special regulation by the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2687A. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2687, colleagues, comes to you from your Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee with a unanimous due pass recommendation. This bill will ensure coverage of mental health services provided by licensed marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors when the same services provided by other qualified mental health professionals are already covered. House Bill 2687 is not a new mandate. Senate Bill 2 from last session already requires insurers to cover the services of four of the six licensed and regulated qualified mental health providers. This bill merely adds licensed marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors to that list. Insurance companies can still select who will be on their panels and in their provider networks. They just can't discriminate against an entire group of mental health professionals. House Bill 2687 protects Oregon citizens. The bill requires marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors to be licensed to practice. Oregon is currently one of only a few states where anyone without training can call themselves a mental health counselor or therapist and get paid by clients without being licensed by the state. To become a licensed marriage and family therapist in Oregon, a master's or doctoral degree in marriage and family therapy or related discipline must be earned with 270 to 500 direct client therapy hours provided in school in conjunction with a minimum of 2,000 postgraduate clinical hours of providing therapy. These are highly trained professionals. House Bill 2687 provides Oregonians with access to the valuable services provided by these individuals. And colleagues, my colleague from Southern Oregon, who's an attorney, pointed out that there is a consideration that needs to take place on the Senate side. Right now, there's not an appeals process for a violation in this bill if a counselor is accused of a violation. And I will work with the Senate to make sure that an appeals process does get in. And I thank my colleague from Southern Oregon for pointing that out. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just rise in support of this bill. This is one of those bills that is about health care reform, and we don't see too many of those. This is about an incremental improvement in health care access to all Oregonians. It raises or increases the pool of available providers to provide a valuable service to people of the state of Oregon, and I encourage your aye vote because this is about lowering costs across the board to the constituents in each and every one of our districts. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this bill's long time overdue. I'm glad to see us take this step, and this is a good step for the state of Oregon. It's a good step for the constituency in the state of Oregon, the citizens. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd just like to express my gratitude to the chair of the committee and the members of the committee who heard the bill and worked with us on it.
Representative Buckley, excuse me. Representative Richardson got into the queue just as I recognized you, and we'd like to take him. Thank you. Representative Richardson.
Thank you. I'm sorry for getting in the queue late. Colleagues, representatives, I had an opportunity to have a discussion with the good representative from Ashland who is carrying this bill about one aspect of the bill that causes me concern, and I was off the floor for a few minutes, and so I hope this is not redundant, but it's important that one that I wanted to bring up, and that is the power that this board will have over individuals who are accused of some violation under the auspices of the board. You have a board that has the ability under this bill to decide if they want to investigate and bring an action or bring a process, as they refer to it, against a member of their organization. And then if they choose to, they can fine this member up to $2,500 per incident. Plus, they can also assess the costs of their investigation and their process. And the risk for an individual is, and if I'm an attorney and someone comes to me and they says, hey, I'm being they're coming after me and I want representation, I would have to say, understand, by fighting this, the cost goes up and you may be responsible not only for your own attorney's fees, but also for the entire cost of the investigation. And if they hire experts and if they do a research investigation, all of those things take place, and those all cost money, plus $2,500 per incident. And so the same ones that are investigating you also control how much they're spending, and they can assess the whole cost of it on your shoulders. And so you may be facing somewhere between $20,000 and $50,000 of costs if this doesn't go well. And so that is a pretty fearful or awesome thing for a person to have to consider if they're being investigated. Do I just bow my head and say, whatever you guys say, I'm going to go along with and try and not offend anyone? Or do I say, you know, I think that you're in the wrong and I want to fight this. But if I do, I have to know that you have the power to burden me extremely heavily for having the audacity to challenge what you're doing. And I think that's a real dangerous power position to give a board. And I know there's some other boards that have that. And I think that we as a body ought to take them on one at a time and say there must be oversight. There has to be an appeals process so that if somebody feels that they're being treated unfairly by a board, and by the way, I have no reason to think that this board isn't the finest board in the whole world, but 5 years from now it could be different. You know, you just don't know. And so if a bill like this doesn't have an appeal process to an administrative hearings officer or some other independent person or group outside of this inside baseball, then you've got individuals at an extreme disadvantage because of the potential retaliation that can be placed on their shoulders by the only ones that they're dealing with, which is the board that is bringing the investigation to begin with. So anyway, that's a grave concern that I have, and so for that reason I won't be voting in favor of this. Representative Buckley, I'm sure, will address the fact that this can be fixed on the other side, but I just want you to know it's a huge concern in my feelings of fairness whenever this kind of thing comes up. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I urge your support of House Bill 2687, but I share some of the concerns raised by Representative Richardson. I do want to point out that the cost provision he's discussing seems to be in the original language of the statute, not new in this bill. But it is something that also came up in regard to a bill that we had dealing with a pharmacy board. And I want to encourage us to, at some point, look at this in the big picture rather than in each bill as it comes up dealing with administrative procedures. So, again, I share the concern about the cost provision. It is in the original statute, however, and I encourage us to keep an eye out for it and look for a remedy to that that isn't piecemeal in the future. But I do urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. While others have been speaking, I have...
To the bill?
Yes, to the bill. Thank you. I have been looking at various provisions of the bill, and I simply want to note for the record that the limitations in the on the first page of the bill, lines 10 and 11, do require that counselors or therapists operate within the scope of practice defined by statute, and, of course, that statute is... found in ORS 675.715 and the next couple of sections. And a quick comment on the discussion that's been going on penalties. As a former member of the Board of Psychologists Examiners, I'm very concerned that these boards have adequate authority to both discipline members and recover costs as they need to. I think it's perfectly reasonable for the Senate to consider amendments. It's perfectly reasonable for them to be certain that the system is fair. But the point of these boards, after all, is to protect the public from practitioners who violate their ethical requirements or their scope of practice requirements. And the boards need the tools in order to do that. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, briefly, thanks to my colleagues for the discussion on this bill and the support of the bill. As I mentioned previously, I will work on the Senate side to review an appeals process for the board, and I do thank the representatives for the discussion about looking at this board as one of several boards that we have that regulate different professions in our state. I'd also like to thank my constituent, Mary Lou Brophy, who brought this bill toward to me, and I look forward to your support in its passage today. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. House Bill 2687A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2892, relating to union organizing and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third and final passage of House Bill 2892. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2892, otherwise known as the State Financial Accountability Act, which comes to you from your House Committee on Business and Labor, with all members except one voting for it. The bill simply states that taxpayer money shall not be used to either support, oppose, or in other ways interfere with union organizing activities. This means that state employers or contractors may not use taxpayer dollars, state money, either to support or oppose workers' efforts to form a union. And there is clear evidence, as we heard in our committee, that there is a real problem here. But I also believe that this bill deserves your support on principle. When tax dollars are budgeted for a specific project, there is an underlying promise to the people that those funds will be spent on that project only and not spent trying to pursue an unrelated agenda, be it pro-union or anti-union. An example of this was brought to us by the Service Employees International Union Local 503, and they recently experienced firsthand the problem of expending tax dollars fighting organizing drives. During an effort to unionize bus drivers working for the Gresham-Barlow School District, workers were subjected to a vigorous anti-union campaign at taxpayer expense. This included captive audience meetings of the kind that this chamber has already voted to forbid, as well as bringing in outside drivers to intimidate the workers. In another example, workers at the Early Head Start Family Centers of Portland tell a similar story. In their case, over $50,000 of public funds was spent trying to thwart the will of the workers. This is money that should have gone to serve families and children. In the opinion of many, such tactics are just plain wrong. We believe that the question of whether or not to form a union is one that ought to lie with the employees alone. But I understand that not everyone shares that opinion. An opinion that I believe we all share, though, is that tax dollars and scarce state resources ought to be spent as efficiently as possible. Without this bill, the State Financial Accountability Act, it is not possible to move closer to achieving that. Members of this body have heard extensive testimony and other oratory on the importance of preserving and strengthening the freedom of Oregon workers to form unions if they choose to do so. So I'm not going to give you another speech. But whether we are liberal, moderate, or conservative, we can all agree that public funds, the taxpayer dollars that we so preciously guard, need to be spent wisely and with discipline. Whether we would rather see this money invested in social programs, a more balanced long-term budget, or more tax relief for Oregonians, I hope we can all agree that we do not want to see more waste. By voting yes on House Bill 2892, we can make some small but immediate progress on something about which we all agree. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2892. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, colleagues, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I was a yes vote in committee on this until I started to inquire and ask some questions. If you're a private entity and you have a year contract or a two-year contract with ODOT, you have to adhere to this bill, even though you're a private entity. The idea is that you're accepting tax dollar money to do a job, and therefore you are unable to combat a union with your own profits. I disagree with that. I think that once it's your profit, it's your money. If it did come from the state, it came from the state, so be it. It's still your money. It's still your profit. You should be able to spend that any way you want. Shouldn't be dictated to by the state of Oregon on how you do spend your profit. So therefore, I strongly urge a no vote on this, as this seemed like a very milquetoast type bill until you really started inquiring about it, and it isn't what it appears to be. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Krimmel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question. I wonder if the carrier would be willing to answer.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I will.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. On page 2, at line 3, it describes what state funds are. And it also then goes on to describe state government and state property. If a local jurisdiction receives state dollars in terms of shared revenue, do those dollars need to be sequestered to ensure that any contracts that they may pay out for work that is done from those dollars then is not used in compliance with this bill?
Thank you, Representative. There is nothing in this bill that requires them to do so.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Carrier yields.
Thank you. Is there a along those same lines, if a contractor does work for local government, let's say fixes a road, and most of our cities use shared state revenues from the gas tax for their road maintenance. So if they contract with someone to fix a road, will that business be required to do as it says in I believe it's section sub 2C on page 2 starting at line 17, where they have to show that they have not used money, excuse me, maybe it's line 22, where they have to show that they have not used state funds in compliance with this bill?
Not sure, Representative, not sure I understand your question.
I'll be glad to clarify, Madam.
Clarification?
It states here that the contractor on line 23, page 2, that they may not use state, oh, that's state property, excuse me. I had it here a second ago. Oh, here it is. Excuse me. It's on line 18. It says, before the disbursement of a grant of state funds, the recipient shall provide a certification to the state government that none of the funds will be used to assist, promote, or deter union organizing. So my question is that if a local government is using state shared revenues, say, for example, the road fund dollars, for fixing a road, does the contractor that is doing the road fixing, on banking that there might be a possibility that state shared revenues are being used, are they going to have to certify that that their funds are not being used to assist, promote, or deter union organizing?
Just a moment, Representative. Representative, if I understand what you're asking, under the definition of state funds in this bill, which is any monies drawn from the state treasury or any trust fund or special fund of state government, including those funds that are transferred by state government to any other public body, if you are a recipient of those state funds under the language that you were just referring to, then you would be required to make such a certification.
Follow up.
Does the carrier yield?
I will.
She does?
Thank you. So in addition to any contractors that are out there, our local governments then, county, cities, special districts, if they receive any state funds, they are going to need to be able to certify that those state funds are not being used in any way to assist, promote, or deter union organizing. Correct?
Representative, during the length of a contract where state funds are being expended, then yes, you would have to certify that you are not using those state funds to promote, deter, or otherwise interfere with this organizing drive. If once the contract's completed, then that requirement expires, so whatever happens at that point, there's no longer any jurisdiction because there's no state contract.
Different question, Madam Speaker.
Does the carrier yield to a question?
Yes, I do. But just a moment, Representative.
The carrier yields.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll wait.
And Representative, I'd like to correct my previous answer. We are in looking in more detail at the language of this bill. This applies to state government, not local government. If you look at the definitions, it is applicable under. If you look at the definition of state contract on the bottom of page 1, a public contract with the state government for goods or services, or a subcontract for providing part of or all of the goods or services. So that is only if you have a contract with state government.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you still have an additional question, I'd be happy to answer it.
I do. Thank you.
The carrier yields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and Representative. So on the LFO analysis, at the bottom of the page, it says the Department of Administrative Services Human Resource Management Division, after consultation with the Department of Justice Legal Counsel, is concerned about this measure's requirement that contractors with the state would be required to track separately state-funded contracts. This could result in an increase in the cost of doing business with the state. DAS believes that this may either discourage contractors from bidding on state contracts or potentially increase the cost of state contracts. Therefore, the fiscal impact of this measure is indeterminate. I want to focus on the comment that DAS believes that this may either discourage contractors from bidding on state contracts or potentially increase the cost of state contracts. Was that discussed in the committee, and what was the outcome of that discussion?
Representative, that was not discussed in committee, and that the statement you're reading was prepared after the committee acted.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as was demonstrated, there is a little bit of a misunderstanding, I think, about how far down this bill goes. All of our local governments, cities and counties in particular, receive state funds. It is part of our state shared revenue stream. They get money from gas tax, they get money from cigarette tax, they get money from alcohol tax, they get money from a variety of other sources. What this bill tells me is that what the city bookkeepers better do is that they better keep track of the state funds that come in and sequester those funds in a separate account so that those funds are not used in paying a contract where the contractor may have been in violation of this bill if this bill were to become law. Now, you may think that I'm talking around the issue here, but basically it's a basic trickle-down effect. Because this bill says that state funds shall not be used for assisting, promoting, or deterring union activities. But if a contractor with a city has taken steps to assist, promote, or deter union activities, then there is a potential that some of these funds were used unless they can show through their bookkeeping and certify through their bookkeeping that they, in fact, did not use any of those funds for those purposes. It is a trickle-down effect. I think there's some unanswered questions to this bill that would require it, quite frankly, to still need some work. I'm also concerned about the fact that we start having contractors deciding that it's become too expensive to do business with the state and start not bidding on contracts. Now, I recognize that there's a lot of businesses out there that say, well, wait a minute, you know, government money is the easiest money to get because you go out and you do the project and they pay you within 90 days, so it's good for cash flow and so on and so forth. And there is a lot of truth in that. But if it's going to start costing more to do business with the state, that's going to be reflected in the cost of the bids because the bids will go up. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen.
Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
The carrier yields.
Thank you. And my sincere apologies for not getting to you with these questions.
Representative, I don't know why you should be different from anybody else who's been asking questions.
Well, I didn't get these questions until just moments ago, and they came to me from the two hospitals in my district. And without laboring onto a whole bunch of the points that they were making, one in particular bothered me or concerned me, and that has to do with Section 3B. And it also has to do with Medicaid funds. And I'm first question, I guess, Madam Speaker, was there any discussion of Medicaid funds as this bill was being talked about in committee?
Thank you for that question, Representative. No, there was not.
And follow up, if I may, Madam Speaker.
Further question, does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you. And with this, both of my hospitals, in two of the hospitals in my district, are concerned that there will likely be numerous challenges by labor if Medicaid money is included in this.
Representative, as I replied to the previous questioner, this bill repeatedly refers to state contracts and state funds. It does not apply to federal funds. I'm not sure where people are getting that interpretation, but I think the bill is very explicit in that respect.
Thank you. And I'm not sure where the folks are coming from, particularly on this either.
Further question?
To the bill.
To the bill?
Thank you. And again, my apologies to the carrier of the bill, because I didn't have these questions earlier, and that was somewhat unprepared myself with it. I do have, therefore, some reservations, regarding this. I wish that somehow that issue might have been talked about. It is, I believe, a House bill and will be headed to the other chamber. And I would merely like to request that the carrier or the sponsors of the bill would specifically ask and talk to the other chamber about it and investigate this before the other chamber proceeds on with it. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a my bad. You will note that I voted for this bill in committee. It was late in the afternoon. My brain went dead. I thought it applied only to state agencies. I have come to realize that it reaches down into the state contractors, and I am opposed to this bill despite the I vote that is indicated in your packets. I would urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Well, it's no surprise that I support this bill, but I just want to point a couple things out. I'm a union guy. That's no surprise to anyone. I don't want my state tax dollars beating people over the head who are trying to organize a union. But if you read the if you read the language here, assist, promote, or deter. So if I vote for this bill, I'm not just voting to prevent state tax dollars being spent fighting a union. I'm also voting to prevent state tax dollars to promote a union. It cuts both ways. So if I voted no on this bill, I would be saying, I think it's okay to bust unions with state tax dollars, and I'd be saying, it's okay to spend state tax dollars to promote unions. It's real clear, in my humble opinion. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I need to declare a conflict of interest, a potential conflict of interest.
Please declare the nature of your conflict.
Madam Speaker, I, along with I think many, many people in this building, potentially do work with contractors or subcontractors or their companies themselves have financial arrangements with the state of Oregon.
The conflict is noted for the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to clarify a couple of points that have been alluded to that aren't correct, one being Medicare.
To the bill?
This is to the bill. The Medicaid monies that get sent are not just federal money. There is a match. And so for every dollar of Medicaid money that gets sent to a medical provider, whether it be a hospital or otherwise, it contains state dollars. And so the bill says when there's state dollars involved, then there cannot be any use of that money in a way that might deter union organization. Now, to say it's to assist or promote or deter is certainly not being realistic to what's really intended with this bill. And I would also point us to something that's very difficult to comply with in this bill. On page 3, subparagraph 4A, on lines 6, 7, 8, and 9, the specific wording that relates says that BOLI is to establish rules that must include reasonable requirements for state contractors that they maintain records sufficient to show that no state funds were used to deter union organizing. And so that's a tough burden, because what it means is that if any contractor were to have the audacity to try and resist unionization of their people, then by the mere fact that they are resisting, it asks for an evaluation of all of their funds to see if any of the funds that they're using in that resistance may have come from a state source. And if that's the case, now they're on the defense. Nice bill if you happen to be in favor of having unions have an unbalanced playing field, which is what this is. And so I will vote no against this because I believe that it's inappropriate to tell business that they have to maintain records to prove that they didn't do something, because proving a negative is a very, very difficult thing to do. And so, well worded for the goal of the bill, but it's not going to be easy to comply with for any business that wouldn't just roll over at the first sign of union organization. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've heard a lot of discussion, not only today, but last week, about strong-armed people getting beat over the head, and I'm tired of it. Yeah, we'd like this bill to work both ways. I read page 2, line 39. This section does not apply to an activity performed or to be expensed incurred in connection with line 43B, allowing a labor organization or its representatives to access the employer's facility or property. Colleagues, I rise today to say we are hitting on a bunch of bills that are not going to help the economy in the state of Oregon. If we want to bring jobs here, employers that want to bring jobs here, we need to be very careful as to the labor laws that we pass in this House, that businesses that want to come to this state and help us grow revenues that will allow us to provide the services for the people of this state, we need to be very, very careful. I raise today in opposition to this bill, and Madam Speaker, I declare a conflict of interest as I'm a private employer with state contracts.
The conflict is noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Madam Speaker, I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Please declare the nature of your conflict.
Own a private business that contracts with the state.
The conflict is noted for the record. Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
I'd like to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state the nature of your conflict.
I have a company that subcontracts with the state.
Thank you. The conflict is noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish... Oh, excuse me. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wish to declare a conflict.
Please declare the nature of your conflict.
I'm a member of a limited liability corporation that subcontracts to state agencies.
That conflict is noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Minnis.
Madam Speaker, I need to declare conflict. My husband works and is a manager for the state. Thank you.
The conflict is noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Minnis requests a call of the House. Actually, that was Representative Patty Smith, requests a call of the House. She is joined by Representative Garrard, Representative Gilman, Representative Witt, Representative Buckley, and Representative Olson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant at arm will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barker Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Beyer Bonamici. Boone. Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Cannon Clem, Clem Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Dingfelder Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilliam Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Greenlick Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, Not answering. Barker. Fire. Cannon. Dingfelder. Gilliam. Greenlick. Excuse, not subject to the call. Boquist. Burley.
All members are present. Further discussion on House Bill 2892? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
I do, Madam Speaker, and thank you very much for those who voted to have a call so that everyone would be forced to listen to my closing speech. Colleagues, House Bill 2892 is really a very simple bill. It just says that if you choose to apply for and accept taxpayer dollars from the state as part of a state contract, you're agreeing not to promote or oppose or in other ways interfere with a union organizing drive. Now, if you don't want to abide by that, it's very simple. You don't have to accept those taxpayer dollars. There's plenty of work out there in the private sector, as has been noted. And I think there have been a number of things said about this bill that are really a little bit misleading. I think that it needs to be clarified again that once the contract is completed, you are free to do whatever you want with your profits or any other monies that you hold. So I don't think that that would be a problem ongoing. I think as to the economic development argument, I would really question what sort of economic development it is that we need to promote as a state that involves interfering with employees' basic rights to form a union if they choose to do so. The bill does provide for some exceptions, and that includes an employer's ability to pursue a collective bargaining agreement that they are part of, a party to handle grievances. It also, pursuant to that, includes the union's right to access a workplace as they normally would be able to. So the bill does not interfere with those things. As to the question I was asked about Medicaid funds, the question was specifically about Medicaid funds. Obviously, the state matching portion of that fund would be state funds as defined by this bill, but that wasn't the question that I understood that I was being asked. Colleagues, I think that this really is about being careful stewards of taxpayer dollars. And I believe that most of us would agree. In fact, I think all of us would agree that that's what we're sent here to do, to assure our constituents and the taxpayers of Oregon that their tax dollars are being used for the purpose for which they are intended and not for extraneous purposes. There are many things that when you're a party to a state contract, as all those who declared a conflict of interest know, that you have to do. And that is simply part of doing business. You don't want to do that. You don't have to apply for those funds. You don't have to sign on to a contract. I think that we have passed a series of bills that are good legislation that simply say we're going to stay out of the business of promoting or opposing unionization, that we leave that to employers and to their employees, that that's not something we need to take sides on. That's all this bill says, as well as taking care to use our tax dollars wisely. Colleagues, I would urge your aye vote on House Bill 2892.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes no. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes no. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Thatcher votes no. Wisnett votes no. Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson votes no. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan votes yes. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Representative Garrard votes no. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes yes. And Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. House Bill 2892, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2937 be carried over to its proper place on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, third reading calendar. The carrier is excused. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3103, relating to public disclosure of rate filing information.
Question now arises upon third reading and final consideration of House Bill 2937, or House Bill 3103. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise today to urge your support for House Bill 3103, a bill that will bring more transparency to the rate review process for individual and small group health insurance rates. This bill is part of a broader set of health reform recommendations that were made by the Department of Consumer and Business Services, or DCBS, in their report on health insurance in Oregon. The House recently gave unanimous approval to another transparency bill recommended by DCBS. That was House Bill 2213, which requires all insurers to provide reasonable estimates to their policyholders about the cost of common medical procedures. This bill, 3103, will bring similar transparency to the Department's review of health insurance rate filings. More specifically, the bill will do the following three things: require that a carrier's rate filings of individual, portability, and small employer group health benefit plans be available for public inspection immediately upon filing with the Department. 2, allow the director to make the filings public and accessible to the public by posting the filings on the department's webpage for easy access by stakeholders. And finally, authorize the director to exempt from disclosure portions of rate filings that contain trade secrets that would harm competition if disclosed. So you can see that the bill starts with a presumption in favor of public disclosure, but also includes an opportunity for insurers to demonstrate that disclosure of certain elements of their filings would harm competition. The department routinely does receive confidential information and has a proven track record in protecting such information. House Bill 3103 will accomplish two main purposes. The first is it enhances public accountability. This bill encourages an open public process to enhance the state's commitment to public accountability. By posting these filings, the department would facilitate public scrutiny of those filings and create an opportunity for consumer groups, purchasers, industry watchdogs, and the general public to comment on specific issues and offer alternative viewpoints. Rate filings contain a great deal of information that may be of interest to one or more of these constituencies. Among the issues covered in a typical rate filing are medical trend. What does the carrier expect medical inflation to be over the next year? Loss ratios. What percentage of the premium dollar will go back to consumers in the form of claims payments? Administrative costs. How much the insurer has allocated for their own administrative costs? And profit margin. What's a reasonable profit margin for the insurer after all claims costs and administrative costs are covered? Under current law, much of the information and documentation that health insurers use to answer these questions, including rating practices, renewal underwriting practices, and rating methods, is defined as proprietary and confidential, and so is not subject to public disclosure. This bill makes it clear that health insurance rate filings are public records and allows the department to post the filings for public review, except where the carrier demonstrates that disclosure of certain data harms competition. So that gets me to the second benefit of this bill, and that is public rate review enhances market competition. This bill enhances competition by increasing the pace at which innovations spread through the marketplace. Carriers already keep a close watch on what each other are doing in the marketplace, and this allows them to do the job more quickly and efficiently. Again, there is that exception process available for new business strategies that deserve protection, but most innovations can and should be transparent. Finally, I do want to note that Oregon is not breaking new ground on this bill. There are already 9 other states that have taken an open and public approach to health insurance rates by defining rate filings as public records open to scrutiny, and 5 of those states already post rate filings on their websites. So I urge your support for this bill and would look forward to questions if there are any. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, does the carrier wish to close? She does not. Those are who of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Call a voice vote.
Representative Richardson requests a voice vote. Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call. He is joined by Representative Wisnett, Representative Gilliam, Representative Flores, Representative Dallum, Representative Maurer. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelser, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, 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 Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnett, Witt, Mr. Speaker, voting no, Butler, Dallum, Esquivel, Flores, Garrard, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Hannah, Krieger, Crummel, Maurer, Morgan, Olson, Richardson, Scott, Greg Smith, Thatcher, Wisnett, excused, Burley, Cameron, Nelson.
38 ayes, 19 noes, and 2 excused. Three excused. House Bill 3103, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will call the next bill. Read the next bill.
House Bill 3104, relating to urban renewal agencies.
Representative Rosenbaum. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3104. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House...
Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise? Representative Richardson?
We just wanted to give you notice that we'd like an oral vote on this bill.
Representative Richardson, the parliamentarian informs me that that is not appropriate at this time, and as we... And when we get ready to call for the vote, I will recognize you.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 3104, which comes to you with a unanimous recommendation from the House Committee on Business and Labor. It's really quite a simple bill. House Bill 3104 says that a governing...
Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Stretching.
your button was pushed.
The parliamentarian informs me that you should not be in the privilege queue until such time as we are ready to take the vote. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3104 specifies that the governing body of an Oregon city with a population greater than 400,000 will be the budget committee of that city's urban renewal agency. You may know that that refers to the city of Portland. So what this bill does is says that the Portland City Council will be the budget committee for the Portland Development Commission, thus giving the City Council the right to approve the PDC's budget and ensure public involvement in the process. The current situation is that local budget law requires every municipal corporation to have a budget committee. And as of 2005, that applies to Portland, and it was made very explicit in legislation that we passed last session. For most jurisdictions, the budget committee is comprised of the governing body and an equal number of its citizens. However, for both the City of Portland and the Portland Development Commission, jurisdictions with more than 200,000 residents, which have a tax supervising and conservation commission, the governing body is the budget committee. Therefore, the PDC commission is its budget committee. The PDC is appointed by the mayor of Portland but does not have members who are directly accountable to the public. This is extremely important because the PDC is a significant urban renewal and economic development agency with an annual budget of over $250 million. They are the only urban renewal agency in the state of Oregon that serves as its own budget committee. This change will increase the PDC's accountability to the community by aligning the agency's specific actions with concrete policy goals and priorities set by the elected City Council. At the conclusion of the budget review and approval process, the Portland Development Commission Board will still be able to modify up to 10% of the budget within any fund before final adoption and enactment. This will preserve the PDC's quasi-independent status and also allow the PDC to remain entrepreneurial in the implementation of the Council's policy goals and be nimble enough to respond to changing market conditions and the best business practices. If this measure passes, the PDC Commission will remain the agency's governing body and will retain the ability to control all day-to-day activities, including all implementation decisions such as where to put projects and who will develop them. I also want to point out that there is a measure coming before voters in the City of Portland shortly that will also ask them the same question. It's a companion to this measure. The City Council will have the ability to review the budget and ensure that the PDC Portland Development Commission's actions align closely with the community's
plans and exceptions thereto. As I said before, this bill received a unanimous vote in our committee, and I would urge you to vote for it as well. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Friends, if you are not aware of it, and I think a lot of you Portland folks are, Portland has a very unique structure in terms of its city government. It is unique not just among within the state, but really within the nation. It also doesn't have the conventional budget committee that those of us who have grown up with local government assumes that all governments have. Portland has this tax supervision and I forget the rest of it, the SOUP commission, and it oversees budget matters for a whole host of Portland area jurisdictions, and it is not just a Portland City Budget Committee. Last session I sponsored legislation to change that and authorized, and it passed, legislation that would allow the City of Portland to also have its own budget committee. I think it's an important step to get citizens more directly involved with Portland City government. In discussion in committee around this bill, I also believe that the Portland Development Commission could use a little more citizen input, and combining the two together with a budget committee oversight of the Portland and budget committee oversight of the Portland Development Commission, I voted in favor of this bill. I hope those of you who are particularly represent the Portland area are proactive in keeping feet to the fire up there in terms of more and better citizen participation in these whole structures, because it's a big city, it is our central city, and we need to look at it like the rest of local government and make sure that these big sort of government things have plenty of citizen involvement and oversight. I'd urge an aye vote with the assurance and understanding that we're going to be keeping an eye on how proactive both of these agencies, the City of Portland and the Portland Development Company, are in terms of responsiveness to their citizens. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close? She does not. Representative Richardson? Representative Hannah? Representative Scott requests a call of the House. Representative Scott is joined by Representative Dallum, Representative Morgan, Representative Hannah, Representative Maurer, and Representative Butler. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barker Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boone Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gilzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Olson Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excuse, not subject to the call. Burley. Cameron. Nelson.
All members are present. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would request an oral vote.
Representative Richardson has requested an oral vote. He is joined by Representative Gerard, Representative Scott, Representative Gilliam, Representative Maurer, Representative Dallum. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed no. The clerk will call the roll in the reverse order.
Witt. Wisnet. Wisnet. Tomei. Thatcher. Patty Smith. Greg Smith. Shields. Scott. Scott. Schaffler. Rosenbaum. Roblin. Riley. Richardson. Reed. Olson. Nolan. Nelson. Nathanson. Nathanson. Morgan. Minnis. Maurer. McPherson. McPherson. Lim. Crummell. Krieger. Krieger. Kotek. Comp. Jensen. Hunt. Holvey. Hannah. Greenlick. Gerard. Gerard. Gilman. Gilliam. Gelzer. Gerard. Galizio. Flores. Esquivel. David Edwards. Chris Edwards. Dingfelder. Dingfelder.
Hey, Gene.
Dingfelder. Dallum. Cowan. Clem. Cannon. Cameron. Butler. Burley. Buckley. Buckley. Bruin. Boquist. Boone. Bonamici. Byer. Berger. Barnhart. Barker. Voting no. Gerard. Wisnet. Excused. Burley.
Privilege Q.
Cameron. Nelson. Oh, excuse me. Mr. Speaker.
Representative Wisnet, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. Apologize to the body and to the staff. Change my vote to aye.
Wisnet changes to aye. Wisnet changes to aye. There are 56 aye votes, one no vote, and three excused. House Bill 3104, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. Representative Holvey, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Chair, I request to return to courtesies.
Representative Holvey requests return to courtesies. Any objection? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I may have missed them because I think they just left, but I had a group of third and fourth graders from Twin Oaks Elementary School and their leader, Dana Marks. There was 26 of them, and I believe they left. But anyway, I just wanted to say I wished I got a chance to say hi.
Thank you. Further courtesies? Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 3291 be carried over to its proper place on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3360 relating to tankless water heaters.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3360. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3360 deals with the tankless water heaters, which provide hot water only as on demand. In most cases, they are suitcase size and heat water instantaneously with no reserve or supply of water. Although they do not store any water, tankless water heaters are currently not exempt from current statute because they surpass the 200,000 BTU per hour heat input standard. As a result, a boiler license is required to install them. House Bill 3360 allows licensed plumbing contractors to install, alter, or repair tankless water heaters by exempting the devices from current boiler and pressure vessel laws. The bill has no opposition and passed unanimously out of business and labor. I ask for your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Call for an oral vote.
Representative Richardson requests a roll call vote. He is joined by Representative Scott, Representative Minnis, Representative Wisnett, Representative Flores, Representative Dallum. The clerk will call the roll. Those of the opinion that the bill shall pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. And the clerk will vote. We'll call the roll.
Sorry. Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Krummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Burley, Cameron, Nelson.
Yes. 57 ayes, 3 excused. House Bill 3360, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to its proper place on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading of memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table? First readings of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 116, relating to towers and motor vehicles. Senate Bill 149, relating to State Department of Geology and Mineral Industry. Senate Bill 161, relating to medical marijuana. Senate Bill 234, relating to protection of biopharmaceutical crops in Oregon and appropriated money. Senate Bill 302, relating to judgments of foreclosure on sale. Senate Bill 567, relating to custody of vehicles. Senate Bill 592, relating to credit unions. Senate Bill 707, relating to beverage containers and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 204 relating to services process on farm work camp operators. Senate Bill 645 relating to shopping carts.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Chair requests unanimous third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bill remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to its proper place on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Republicans, we will caucus. Grab your lunch and come to the caucus room, please.
Further announcements, Representative Hunt.
Ditto for Democrats.
Further announcements, remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've been thinking about public safety since our activity a couple of days ago, and I just wanted to make a few comments about that subject. May I ask, Madam Chair, or Madam Speaker, how long a remonstrance speech? Is that my clock right there? Thank you. When we first started talking about this issue, as a freshman legislator, I didn't see the problem. Because from my perspective, whenever I went slightly over the speed limit, there was always a trooper present. And as a result, I did a lot of funding of the state police. But as I've looked into this, I believe those who advocate for the fact that we do need to restore them to 24/7 coverage. I was helped in this by their lobbyists. And I think maybe you all know this, but their lobbyist works part-time for the troopers, and he also pulls late-night shifts as a state trooper. I was helped in this by the representative from Albany because of his long service. But the person that impressed me the most about restoring troopers and about public safety was the governor of this state. I can't remember which party he's with, but I do know this. On my first full day as a legislator, as a freshman, after inaugurating the governor and being sworn in this chamber, the first thing he did was walk out on these steps on a rainy day and address troopers and make a commitment to public safety. I'm calling on us to rally around the governor's leadership and the leadership of the speaker in making public safety a priority. I think that we can do this. I know that we can do this. 3535 is one vehicle. I hope we will rally around it. Maybe we need to change it. Maybe we need to amend it. But let's step up together with the umbrella of the governor's leadership giving us an opportunity for unity and make public safety and restoring troopers to the coverage, the 24/7 coverage that Oregonians deserve. We know that in this bounty of this biennium, we've got the money. And if there was one piece here that sort of, you like the alliteration? Thank you so much. If there's one piece to the puzzle here that we could solve on the budget, it's this one. I think we're all committed to public safety. I think we have the money. And I think we have the will, if we will just exercise it, to do this together. Let's fund troopers, and let's give the governor the credit for his leadership. Thank you very much.
Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Jensen. Representative Barnhart. 10:30 a.m., Wednesday, April 25th, 2007.
10:30, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I move the House stand adjourned until 10:30 a.m., Wednesday, April 25th, 2007.
Representative Barnhart moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m., Wednesday, April 25th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.